Is your child struggling with a specific subject or need help with homework? Are they asking questions that you're not sure you can fully answer? IXL Learning is an online learning program for kids. It covers math, language arts, science, and social studies. IXL is designed. This program will improve your kids' grades. Studies done in almost every state in the country, the kids who had IXL are consistently doing better. Powered by advanced algorithms, IXL gives the right help to each kid no matter the age or personality. And it doesn't have to eat up all your time. One subscription gets you everything for all the kids in your home, pre-K to 12th grade. So don't miss out. 1 in 4 students in the U.S. are learning with IXL. IXL is used in 95 of the top 100 school districts in the U.S. Make an impact on your child's learning. Get IXL now. And listeners can get an exclusive 20% off IXL membership when they sign up today at IXL.com/audio. Visit IXL.com/audio to get the most effective learning program out there at the best price.
Welcome back to Season 3 of Comic Book Nation, the official podcast of ComicBook.com. I am your host, Kofi Outlaw, and with me today, Janelle Wheeler.
Hi.
Matthew Aguilar.
What up?
My esteemed co-host from the comic book team. And guys, today is a good day because today we have one of our most highly anticipated movies of the year to talk about. No surprise, that is James Gunn's The Suicide Squad, which is out now in theaters, in IMAX, and of course, on HBO Max. So no matter where you are or how you are, this film can be in front of you right now. And we all seen it. So we're going to talk about it. And we're going to go, just full deep into the world of Suicide Squad as envisioned by James Gunn and get into all that. But we're going to do that in a little bit. To give everybody some time and space, so if anybody hasn't seen the film, you can still get a show before you can drop out and come back later when you've seen the film. Otherwise, you know, if you've seen the film, you're in for this entire ride. So before we talk about The Suicide Squad, we got to talk about a few news items. We're going to talk about what's going on with Spider-Man No Way Home. What's going on with Stranger Things? don't apply that iconic and important song to this Spider-Man No Way Home nonsense, please. We're going to talk about Spider-Man No Way Home. We're going to talk about Stranger Things and some other news items. And Matt has a little bit of something he wants to tease. Matt has a little tease for you guys. We also have some early reacts to Marvel's What If, DC's Titans Season 3 to share with you guys, and of course comic book talk, because this is Comic Book Nation. So thank you guys for jumping in, and let's get started right at the top. So guys, what's the deal with Spider-Man No Way Home?
That's really? Amazing. It's amazing.
So there's been a lot of hubbub right now about whether or not when we are going to get this Spider-Man No Way Home trailer. We all were sitting here predicting like, yeah, man, when Loki ends, they're going to drop it with this multiverse stuff. And it looks like, we were way wrong about that. So the internet is still freaking out about this trailer. There was some kind of rumor or kind of discussion. I don't know how this started. Anybody track this back to the beginning? The internet, sometimes I can't. Reddit. I saw a hilarious meme about Reddit. It's like, it was something about like, I'm on Twitter saying I can't find a boyfriend, or like Instagram, it's like, look at me all alone. And then it's Reddit, it's like, hi, should I be marrying somebody who's like, I just found out as my cousin, and da 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 da, something like the wedding starts in 3 hours. Like, you know, but anyway, Reddit, there was talk about there possibly being no trailer for Spider-Man No Way Home, or that they're just going to throw this out here, or Matt, help me out. What was going on?
Who was saying there was no trailer? Was going to be no trailer?
I think there was discussion that people were saying like they could be going with this approach of just not showing anything. And
I feel like they were being sarcastic when they said that.
Please let that be the case, because that is, I want to cuss right now. That is so ridiculous. Why would they not put out a trailer? That just because we didn't get it yet doesn't mean it's not coming. Oh my lord.
Yeah, but the trailer is making people manic. Brandon Davis and Phase Zero, they had a good discussion about this. Jim Viscardi, if he was here like he's supposed to be, Jim Viscardi, he could also break this down. But it's not just a question of the trailer. It's the larger question of the movie, right? Mm-hmm. Because it's not just about the trailer that we're kind of hearing buzz and rumbles. It's about the question of whether there could be more delays. Things are going on, of course, with COVID still in the Delta variant, and there's kind of rumblings about whether or not studios are feeling still confident that the latter half of this year, in the fall, getting into flu season, whether people will still be able. Nobody's really kind of thinking like full lockdowns again, right? We're not there, but we're still kind of wondering if the market will be there with enough force to release these big films in theaters. For Sony, it's particularly kind of tricky because Sony doesn't have its own streaming service. It is like the only studio out there without its own streaming service. So there is none of this premiere access or building subscriptions like HBO Max did with Warner's. They got to actually find a place for these movies. So there's already kind of rumblings that No Way Home could be pushed to 2022 or something like that. I mean, same thing for Bond and all that. But what that means is if there is uncertainty with a release date for this film, it kind of makes it hard to market this film. Studios have learned from the past year, like you can't just keep cutting and blowing your marketing budget on things where you're like, here's the marketing. Oh, whip. Never mind. Nope, that's not happening anymore. Okay, here's the next wave of marketing and like all these weird coming to theaters eventually, like trailers, you know what I mean? So they got to come. Everything kind of has to stabilize for it with the release expectations for there to be marketing and that kind of sort of thing. So is anybody particularly going nuts about this trailer and this film? What do you guys think? Do you think we're going to be getting this at the end of the year? Do you think it'll change? And when, if you had to put on your bingo card, do you think we're going to get this Spider-Man No Way Home trailer?
Thanksgiving. I mean, why not?
As good as anything, yeah.
Thanksgiving is when we're getting the trailer. That's my guess. I wouldn't say that, you know, I am like, I feel like I represent kind of like the fan side of the podcast. Like I'm like a super fan with all our friends watching along. And I kind of look to you guys for advice on these things or inside information, because I feel like you guys are super connected. And as you were just talking, Kofi, I was kind of starting to feel deflated because I am now concerned. I'm concerned about these delays and I just don't want that to happen because we've waited so long. And even like the Black Widow whole movie and scandal with all of the lawsuit, I feel like it just put kind of like a dark cloud over Marvel for me for a little bit. And I just want to feel like a fan geeking out with a huge project and getting really excited in the theater with fellow fans. So I don't know what we need to do to make this happen, but I really, really hope that it doesn't get delayed.
There is a glimmer of hope. People have pointed to the fact that Sony is going to CinemaCon this year, which happens on, and they're doing a 3-hour presentation or some mess, I believe. Yeah, they're doing a 3-hour CinemaCon panel.
3-hour tour. Yeah. Sorry.
I mean,
I haven't done the singing in a long time.
Yeah, I'll take a Gilligan reference. I'm not hating.
Gilligan's cool. And then my wonderful rendition of what's going on.
You stop. Janelle's like literally a like nationally renowned singer.
No.
You are less than.
I sing in the car.
You are less than.
I rap in the car.
Stop it. This
we
is
can make a trio. Car. Let's write a song about the Spider-Man trailer.
Yeah, let's get this train back on the track. So here's the point. Sony's coming to CinemaCon. They're doing a 3-hour panel. There's all these stipulations about phones, devices, and all this stuff cannot be in there. So fans are thinking, like, what kind of goods are they going to do? Either you're going to, like, show us Bond, or you got a Spider-Man trailer, or both. Because Marvel's going to be going to CinemaCon, and they're screening Shang-Chi. So, like, there is precedence for a studio to screen an entire film. So 3 hours is a big block, but it could be Bond. It could be Spider-Man. You know, it could be anything Sony has in the chamber. And, you know, people are hedging their bets that there could be a Spider-Man trailer coming out of this.
I think, oh man.
That's in a couple weeks, by the way.
I think we're more apt to get a Spider-Man trailer than a Bond trailer.
No, I meant a Bond screening. Like they
Bond screening, okay. Yeah,
they could screen Bond for CinemaCon people to build buzz.
I think that's as good a spot as any to get a trailer. I really think because I, going off of what happened with Black Widow, and you could take this two ways. You could say this, oh, hey, they learned. And go, hey, let's not put the cart ahead of the horse. And then you could also say, well, they were pretty stubborn during that whole thing. And look how things turned out, right? They really didn't divert from their plan until they absolutely had to. So in that, if that's in mind, I would say they're probably going to show it sooner than later. I think they'll actually tease it, do some kind of small teaser trailer just to get all the hype out. And honestly, so that people stop peppering their comments with that. So they can release some news about Guardians of the Galaxy or whatever and not get, where's the Spider-Man trailer? Where's the Spider-Man trailer? I mean, it has become.
I mean, I'm tired of hearing it.
We're not quite to Snyder Cut level yet, but we
are there yet.
Are we there yet? It's just, and you're like, oh my God, stop asking me about the Spider-Man trailer.
So, I was kind of reading our chat, and we do have a couple people who are fine with no trailer at all. Keep it all a surprise. That would be legendary, says Brywood. We're all going to see it anyways, which is a good point. Do you guys want the trailer? Or do you think it'd be pretty epic if this is like the first time they decided not to ever do a trailer?
I think it would be epic and ballsy, and I would love to see Feige come out and stand in front of it and be like, you know what? We got some big things for you guys in Spider-Man No Way Home. You just got to find out in December. That's it. Like,
what's
going to happen
Matt's
if he
not
does
down
that?
With it.
The internet's going to be mad. The internet's going to go grumble, 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 grumble from August till December. And then everybody from that grumble pile is going to go pile into theaters and be like,
yeah,
well, I'm not happy about it, but I'm finally here. And then they're going to tweet, oh, my God.
I am not one of those people that is like, I'm not one of the people that says, don't show me anything. I don't want to see anything. I just want to get into the theater and see it. I don't want my experience spoiled. That's like, whatever. I could care less. I want to see stuff. It's not going like a good trailer. I can separate a good trailer from a good movie and a bad trailer from a good, you know what I mean? Like one doesn't really affect the other. I am still going to see the movie. But I do want to see, number one, I just want to see if Tom Holland's even in it.
I'd never jump on anybody's couch.
You have to throw that
you in think
there.
I am? You think I'm crazy? I just jump on somebody's couch?
Is he a cameo? Oh my God, I love that. Anyway, I'm not going to go down the rabbit hole, but that's awesome. So yeah, like I want to see it. I think they will release it sooner than later just to get the teaser out there and so that they can move on with their other marketing strategies. I think that's pretty much what we'll get. And then I saw a comment about like if the con's a big deal. CinemaCon's, I feel like over the last 5 years has become a pretty big deal. I mean, Kofi would know that more than me, but like I think it's a pretty big deal. It comes across as that, like more studios are treating that as a bigger place to debut stuff, right?
Did you ask me a question?
Yeah, I said Kofi would know this better than me because like you're more of the overall movie person. But like CinemaCon's become a bigger deal over the last like 5 years, right?
Yeah, it's come up before things got like really crazy. I feel like there were three things in movies particularly that people gravitated towards. Comic-Con was the big one. And then the two other ones were CinemaCon and WonderCon were the kind of the two other ones that people really went to for kind of TV movie reveals. So it's become a bigger thing in the last few years for sure. Sorry, I was watching this Stranger Things trailer again. So that's what I was doing when you asked me a question. You're not supposed to interact with me.
Well,
contracts stipulate that's not supposed to happen.
But, Matt, we're on our own.
Yeah. Oh my gosh.
But that's kind of like the deal with that. So what was your question again?
Well, just
Yeah, I did.
Yeah, we can just wrap it up. In the end, like, we're hoping for the best. There's no confirmation on if we're getting this trailer or not. Hi, I'm the head of the podcast now. We're hoping for the best. If you guys want to talk more about this, make sure you hit us up on our Twitters, and we'll continue the discussion.
Sorry, I mentally checked out. I went into Stranger Things already. I have thoughts on Stranger Things.
Well, that's perfect. Let's talk about Stranger Things.
So we got a kind of first big teaser trailer for Stranger Things 4 today. Bad news is it's not going to arrive till 2022, although I thought we knew that because we knew they got delayed in production because of COVID, that they were only starting up like this spring. So I didn't know when people thought this was going to happen, but this show takes some visual effects and stuff like that. So yeah, 2022 was pretty much the window of time I figured we were getting this. But no, this looks pretty good, pretty action-packed and more mature and scary. It's awesome that these kids can now all rent a car and stuff like that and, you know, go to set together, because they're so old. But yeah, no, but it looks kind of really cool. This looks like it's going to be the kind of darkest and kind of more action-packed one season yet, which is exactly what the cast has been kind of teasing. So I'm feeling good. I mean, you guys still feeling Stranger Things, or have this time passed?
Yeah, I've kind of moved on, but I know I'm going to get really pumped once it comes out. Like, I just have to build my own hype basically at this point. I might even just go back and rewatch the whole dang thing at some point and binge it. After all, I did binge 2 seasons of Titans this weekend. Yeah, but yeah, I'm excited for it. I think it'll be cool, but they need to build more hype for me. Like, I need to be hearing that buzzword, like Stranger Things more. Do we know how many more seasons they're going to do total, or is this the last one?
I think there's another one after this.
Okay.
Yeah.
Wow.
They haven't said though that like that next season's the final one though. Have they? I think they just have said there's a next season.
Okay.
So yeah, I mean, honestly, I don't know if Netflix wants to end that money train.
We're getting a couple people in the chat that are saying this is the last season, like this was the end. A few, but we could be wrong. It's not confirmed yet. But you know, they are getting older. The kids are getting much older. From the trailer that I saw that just released, I loved seeing the Ghostbusters reference. They were in costumes and like Ghostbuster outfits. And that was just, that alone made me really pumped. I love the 80s references and right. Music and stuff like that. So that kind of brought me back, made me excited. Yeah. Cunning is saying it's also last as well.
Okay. Well, there you go.
Yeah.
Season 3 was also supposed to be.
Here's what Sean Levy, director of Free Guy and kind of one of the show creators of executive producers of Stranger Things, said as of June of this year. He said there is a plan and that too will be shared. Not quite as soon as a sense of when season 4 is coming out, but soon enough I can say this. So while we're no more certain as to whether Stranger Things will end with season 5, we do at least know that the end is in sight. He said that the end is in sight. The Duffer brothers have the end in sight, but they're not commenting on how many seasons it will be. So, I mean, people, since they haven't said anything, I don't think official. I mean, could this be the end? Maybe. I don't know.
By the way, this is my I was right dance.
I feel like there might be one more after this, because wouldn't they know? I mean, I feel like if they're going to be releasing this, they would know.
But that's the part, by the way, Janelle. So when Janelle was talking about like that, the kids are older and like that's for me, that's what keeps pulling me back. I mean, mm-hmm. Granted, all the D&D references and 80s stuff is like right up my alley, but like still, like overall, it's just been fun to watch these characters progress. Like Kofi said, like they can rent cars now, they can do all these things, and watching them grow up though is part of the charm of the show to me. Like I care less about the stuff, all the supernatural stuff and like the upside down, like all the surrounding stuff, I care less and less about as the show goes on. And I care more and more about just like seeing these characters and like how they're interacting, what they're doing now. Like I'm with them. So, I mean, for me, it's like, if it goes to season 6 or 7, cool. I'm cool with that, because like, as long as they don't like just kill everybody, that's why I'm invested in the show. And as they grow older too, I like that. I hope anyway, like the teases of the season being darker, I hope they start kind of leaning more and more into that more mature.
Yeah. They got the Harry Potter formula, but here's just to settle this. Here's what the Duffer brothers have said. Season 4 won't be the end. We know what the end is and we know when it is. The pandemic has given us time to look ahead, figure out what is best for the show. Starting to fill that out gave us a better idea of how long we need to tell that story. So season 4 is not the end.
And a comment in the chat, what we are planting in season 3 that paid off in season 4 and season 5 was a reference from David Arbor.
Yeah. So they've all kind of already hinted there's going to be at least 5. So we know that. We don't know beyond that though.
Cool.
All right. So that's Stranger Things coming 2022. All right. We're going to take a break, pay some bills. Then we're going to come back. Matt's going to give us a quick little teaser of his Witcher coverage. And then we're getting into this Suicide Squad stuff. So let's get it.
Knowing how to speak and understand a new language can be an invaluable tool when traveling, meeting new friends, or just even to master a new skill. But it's not always simple when you're bogged down by textbooks and structure classes. That's why so many people trust Rosetta Stone. Rosetta Stone is the most trusted language learning program, available on desktop or as an app. It truly immerses you in the language you want to learn, like Spanish, French, Italian, Chinese, and more. You won't just be studying English translations. The Rosetta Stone intuitive process helps you pick up a language naturally, first with words, then phrases, then sentences. Don't put off learning that language. There's no better time than right now to get started. For a very limited time, listeners can get Rosetta Stone's lifetime membership for 50% off. Visit rosettastone.com/rs10. That's 50% off unlimited access to 25 language courses for the rest of your life. Redeem your 50% off at rosettastone.com/rs10 today.
All right, we are back. Matt, before we get into this Suicide Squad talk, you wanted to go off about The Witcher.
Just gonna talk a little bit because the review embargo is not quite up on this. But if you check the site today, we will have several interviews with the team all about Nightmare of the Wolf, the upcoming anime film. And I can, while I can't give like dive into full impressions yet, I will say if you had your hopes high for this, I can say like you have a lot to look forward to, because I have a smile on my face and I cannot wait to talk more about this. But we did get to talk to the team about Vesemir and about like their approach to the character. And you've seen a little bit in the trailers where they kind of show a little bit of his dialogue. They'll show like, you can already tell that there's a little more charisma. There's a little more personality there than Geralt, than we've seen. And that's by design. We talked to the team all about kind of their approach to the character, how he's very different. And by the way, that trailer is just like a very small portion of like early on, you see like how different this character is. And you're kind of looking at Vesemir. And if you've watched season one of The Witcher, you're going like, how the hell did this dude like parent like the gruffest says like 10 words like Witcher? Like how did that happen? And so like that's one of the bigger kind of story arcs in this movie. It's just kind of showing how he got from point A to point B and got to the point where, you know, you can then see, okay, well, maybe I can see kind of some of those things. But like they also talked about how his, especially like if you've played Witcher 3 and you've seen some of the interactions between Vesemir and Ciri, how like you're going to get a similar vibe. Like you're going to see why he's kind of playful in those moments. You're going to see some of that reflected here. And I mean, honestly, I was so impressed with some of the action stuff they've done here. And like they've teased in the trailers, Kaer Morhen is going to play a part in this, but like also we're going to see like the actual like ramifications and the process of the Trials of the Grasses, which is like the process of creating a Witcher. And like the books always do a really good job of like kind of trying to express like how awful this process is and how painful it is. And like this movie is going to like kind of really define that in a visual space, because it's not something we've also seen a ton of in the games. We hear about it a lot and we get like little flashbacks and stuff, but like this like takes that on in a huge way. So definitely just a little tease, but definitely check out all the interviews that'll go up throughout the day today and tomorrow. And I cannot wait to talk about this. We will definitely talk about this on the podcast in a few weeks.
All right, that is The Witcher from Matt. All right, thank you, Matt. Now, guys, it's time for the main event. So we are going to get into the Suicide Squad. And the way I thought we'd do this is just do kind of a one round of general impression reviews. Let's just kind of keep it tight on that before. And that's just for the general fans listening right now who may not have seen the movie. So we're going to do spoiler-free, just kind of impression reviews first. Spoilers. We'll do a round, and then we're going to come back, and we'll get into full spoilers and talk about the nitty-gritty of all this. So I guess I'll just jump this off. And as I tweeted last night, as I was watching in real time, I said, oh, this is a James Gunn movie. Like, yeah. And you've heard that about the Suicide Squad in a lot of reviews, but it takes really kind of sitting down and watching it to really know what that means. But if you were a fan of Gunn's early work, like Slither and Super before he kind of got that Marvel contract, this very much feels like a return to that, just under a big studio banner. Like DC really did just let this guy make a James Gunn movie using some DC characters. And boy, did he. And I know some people don't enjoy that because it makes it a little bit more offbeat and weird than a typical superhero movie in terms of kind of like, while it does go through like the same kind of formula and stuff, it's also very much deviates and gets weird on you in very kind of key ways, especially in the middle where some kind of really funny, surprising choices happen. And we'll talk about that in spoilers. But it very much is a James Gunn movie. And what I found is it made me have like a very rich overall movie experience. Like this felt like an entire meal, kind of to put it. Like a lot of stuff feels like I'm drinking an energy drink or so eating some kind of weird gas station snack with a lot of comic book movies, because it's like, you know what I mean? It's like a cheap high for a minute. You're like, yeah, it's great. And then it kind of fades and you're like, oh, what was that? Like it was kind of, a lot of them could be like not so memorable or kind of just bland. But this is a like very rich, like I've already started rewatching this again. And like, I want to see it again and I want to pay attention to more of the scenes and the details and the character interactions and all that stuff, because it is at 2 hours and 20 minutes. There's a lot that James Gunn packs into this movie, and it is very kind of dense, but not in a bad way, but just like very rich and dense. And it feels like a very lived in actual world you are in. And it feels like an entire DC universe that it's a part of, without being distracted or weighed down by continuity and all that stuff that a lot of DC, other DC movies do. And just as is James Gunn's forte, just the team dynamic about these weird people kind of coming together is also very enjoyable and at times surprisingly heartfelt and kind of well done. So, and the action sequences were pretty badass and probably the best action James Gunn has done to date. So overall, I can't complain. Like this is very much a fun, and that's the word I think I would stamp over this film overall, very much a fun kind of romp through what the Suicide Squad could be. And it's almost like I would love James Gunn to get his own run of Suicide Squad comics for a while. Like I would love for him to do an arc in Suicide Squad comics, because I just feel like he gets it and he knows how to make this concept and this team a lot of fun. So that's my spoiler-free impression.
Very nice. Janelle?
Spoiler-free impression. I wish I didn't buy into all of the hype. I had so many friends who obviously previewed the movie. And so I felt like my expectations were way, way, way too high. Although I had no complaints, absolutely amazing, loved it. But I didn't feel as like checked in. Like I kind of felt like, oh, I heard about that. Yeah, I heard about when, you know, Harley did that thing with her feet and the key. Oh, yeah, I already heard about that. Or like I kind of checked my phone here and there because I read too many previews and too many reactions. I feel like I don't have an honest reaction from my perspective, and I'm going to have to watch it again. And I also feel like I definitely want to see this in the theater. It feels like a really good theater film. Obviously, I watched this on HBO Max last night. And I think that it is probably bananas in the theater. Really, really good. I am not, please know, I'm not saying anything bad about it. I adore it. I think it's a fantastic film. My favorite Marvel MCU film of all time is Guardians. And it felt like that, but like edgier and just really, really fun. And I will say that I was kind of disappointed in Harley Quinn for a while. I've been disappointed in Harley. Like, it's not Margot's fault, but just I haven't really been super interested in her. And she always felt a little dainty or a little like too sexy or just. This film felt so Harley. She was like everything I wanted Harley to be. And that was like my favorite part about the whole thing. I'm like, that is my Harley. I love, love Harley in this film. Yeah.
Well, so I think that's, man, that's a perfect.
Hashtag perfect, that's your Harley.
Yeah.
That's a perfect tee up for mine. Cause like we've talked about on the show, right? You know, the White Knight universe is my favorite Harley Quinn. That's my favorite Harley Quinn, but for like a completely different reason. And it's not like I didn't love Margot Robbie's Harley Quinn, because I really enjoy her take on the character. Like, she's perfect. It was kind of like we talked about with Cavill, right? I didn't necessarily love what was built around her. I liked her. I liked him as Superman. I just didn't like the things, right? And I felt the same way as you coming out of this. I went, okay, this is literally my favorite Harley Quinn appearance in the DC movie universe, like better than Birds of Prey. I know I'm gonna make Charlie mad somewhere. He hears me. I know that, but like, this was so much. I thought this just captured, like, it captured the same beats in that movie. Kind of tried to kind of decompress a little bit, but it did it in like a very truncated amount of time, and then like it like let her just be Harley. Like, and you had those like really powerful character moments, but again, like, it just let her be Harley for the rest of it. She wasn't saddled with all this. Like, it was just, it explored it in a different way, and I appreciate it. Again, not disparaging Birds of Prey. I enjoyed Birds of Prey. As Harley Quinn, like this, I loved what they did with this. And honestly, I thought, I've been reading a lot of Suicide Squad comics lately, just the nature of reviewing comics and stuff. And so what I really loved about Gunn's thing, and I actually think Russ Burlingame put it really well on Twitter, was that like there's going to be a lot of talk about the gore. There's going to be a lot of talk about the action and some of the bigger moments, the like, oh my God, shock moments. But like Gunn did such an amazing job with retaining who these characters are and letting you get to know them as people.
Warts and all.
This. Yeah. Right. I mean, you know,
polka dots like, and all.
Sorry. I mean, geez. Yeah. I mean, oh my God.
Like, I loved him.
I did not realize I would care about Polka Dot Man.
Love right? Polka Dot Man.
And, like, I know Polka Dot Man from the comics and stuff. And I've always had an appreciation, like a D level appreciation for like, oh, he's weird and fun and whatever. But not like there's some scenes in here. I was like, oh my God, they really have some fun, but still deal with like his trauma and stuff. This is really interesting things. But like Anawe, Peacemaker, Bloodsport, like there's so many characters that they really nail. Like they feel like people by the end of this, even though they're amidst this over the top thing. And I mean, and this does feel like the most, aside from, I will say, I'll put it right there with Aquaman as feeling the most comic book come to life style movie. I mean, this felt at times like, oh my God, I've read that. Like I've literally read that in a panel, but not just from like dialogue. Like I've seen that come to life. It's really cool. I mean, I came out, I laughed all throughout. I'm like Kofi, I want to go back and watch this. Like Anissa didn't get to watch it with me the first time. She's like, I had to watch it. So I was like, I will watch it again tomorrow. Like, tell me when you can watch it and we will watch it together. So like, I'm jonesing for that. So I came out happy.
All right. Those are our spoiler free impressions of Suicide Squad. It seems like me and Matt were slightly more warm on it than Janelle was, but let's get into the finer points and spoilers. So if you have not seen Suicide Squad, we are getting into our full spoilers discussion as this storm comes over the horizon out my window.
Oh, no.
And Half-Cent Josh, you can't get too drunk for these kinds of things. Half-Cent Josh, these are commitments. You gotta be somewhat sober, somewhat. We're going to put up spoiler warning. Rich is in the booth.
Spoiler!
Rich is our Amanda Waller, as always. He's got our spoiler warning so we don't blow up our heads. But let's get into spoilers are stupid. I'm out. Okay, J.D. Smith, you know, come back and listen.
You can just mute us and look at our faces.
Yeah, we'll do like some blue steel when we're not talking.
Sign language.
But, it says spoilers discussion in a thing. So we are going to talk about that. But J.D. Smith, come back when you are ready to talk. Anybody else, please do come back when you are ready to talk about the Suicide Squad, because we'd love for you to listen to our thoughts and kind of see how they reflect with yours. All right. So spoilers for the Suicide Squad. First things I'm going to say is one thing I love about this movie is even when you know that James Gunn is going to do something like bananas, and you can predict it. You never really can predict just how bananas and twisted James Gunn can get. And I say that in reference to this opening sequence of this film, in which half of the cast that is advertised for this movie, most of the bigger cast that is advertised from this movie, is just completely wiped out on a beachfront. And you learn that, of course, Amanda Waller sent them out there to die so that she could, you know, distract from the real core set of characters that she's sending in for this mission. So we were wondering, like, when the casting and the characters list were done, we're like, TDK, like, Javelin, like, who, like, what are these people? Like, you know, Blackguard. And, of course, it didn't matter because they all get, like, just wiped out in the first couple of minutes. In an awesome scene on the beach of just them getting slaughtered. And, like, yeah, I will say I think I said it on here. I have to go back and find it, that I thought Pete Davidson would be the first to die in this movie. And
you said,
and
that
I was correct about that. Thanks to that first kind of credit scene, I was correct about that. Pete Davidson is the first to die in this movie. It is not Weasel. It is Blackguard. And I could yell that because he can't hide anything. He was sitting in interviews like, why am I even here? Like, I'm in this movie for like 2 seconds. Like, and sure enough. But yeah, that was pretty bananas. Just seeing them die. And of course, other deaths throughout the movie are pretty gnarly as well. But has anybody held their breath and spaz out when you thought King Shark died from that fall and gotten getting
yes.
shot? Yeah, I did.
I was like, if King Shark dies in this movie, I'm going to be pissed.
I was literally like, had my hands over my mouth. I was like, don't you dare kill Nawe. Don't you dare kill him.
Yeah. People got murked in this movie for real. Boomerang.
Right. I can't believe Boomerang left so
Yeah,
quickly.
I can't believe they murked Boomerang so hard in this.
And dude, we're going to get deep in the spoilers. I mean, you know, they killed Flag. I mean, I don't know. Like, that to me, the Boomerang thing was the most important one early because it sets a tone as to there's no sacred cows. They can kill everybody. Yes, you probably understand that they're probably not going to kill Margot Robbie, and you know they're not going to necessarily. They're going to have to find some way to do Peacemaker since he has his own show. Like, there are some realities.
Well, they got me with that because they were careful. That was a thing that was good because I wrote up this article this morning about how does Suicide Squad set up Peacemaker. And they actually marketed Peacemaker, the series, as being a prequel. It's supposed to be the origin story of Peacemaker.
Yeah.
And so they told you that so you didn't know that scene. And I was like, holy crap. Like, James Gunn really did just kill this guy in this movie. Like, I can't believe it. Like, and they make it seem like he's really dead.
Yeah.
And then no, you get they, to that, yeah.
They do a good job. I mean, they really, I even thought, okay, well, he's going to have to like, I mean, I was like, okay, they're going to have to do some really interesting things because yes, that series is coming. So like,
I was just like,
weird.
I was like, oh, this really is a prequel.
But
like,
I believed it. I believed he was dead. In like, you know what I mean? Like, mm-hmm. I really thought that, like, okay, they're going to have to do some really crazy jumping through hoops to fix it. But, like, he's dead. Like, I believed it in the moment. So they hooked me there. And I will say, too, just in general with John Cena's Peacemaker, that character, like, Gunn, it makes me really happy for the series. Because Gunn really got that character, especially, like, if you read, like, some of the current Robbie Thompson Suicide Squad with him in it. That is Peacemaker, like, to a T. Like, yes, I mean, he doesn't make all the, you know, dong jokes. Like, yes, I understand that. That's not necessarily in the comics as much, but like but I still found all that stuff humorous. Yeah,
I felt like panels of that or parts of the movie were like lifted from this current run of Suicide Squad comics. I was like, when he came to Peacemakers.
So when he's like, when he pulls the gun on Flag, I went, oh, that's perfect. And I hate you. I hate you so much, but that's perfect. That's understanding who that character is. Like, you know, he's going to be a fan favorite coming out of that. So the obvious studio thing would be like, well, let's make him a hero. And it was like, in his own brain, he is, but he's doing unheroic things. Right. And I thought they killed that. I thought they did that really well.
Yeah, I knew Flag was going to die. Joel Kinnaman probably didn't even want to come back and do this one, but they were after the first Suicide Squad, but they were like, yo, bro, we got you on this contract. And so he was just like, I knew they would kill Flag off because, I mean, you got Peacemaker, you got Bloodsport, Deadshot's going to come back probably at some point. Jim's here now.
Jim's here. Let's go.
Yes.
Jim is here.
Yeah.
Let's go. I mean, I needed to jump in on the Suicide Squad conversation.
Oh, I'm so glad.
Yeah. So, you know, like they got too many de facto potential leaders of the Suicide Squad now. You got Harley, Deadshot, Bloodsport, Peacemaker. Like, we got a full roster.
Well, Bloodsport even makes that joke, right? Ooh. Early on. Like, he's even like, am I here?
If he's like, would you just say the same thing about me? Like, it's one of a kind.
That's what I love.
Have you guys talked about just how great Viola Davis is in this movie?
No, I hate that woman.
Okay.
I do too.
She killed it.
But that's why she's so good.
No, she's, yes. I mean, there's few people that can do Amanda Waller really well, and she is just totally owning this role. So just to finish up with Peacemaker. So, like, that post-credit scene with him surviving and the kind of two workers. And this is what's genius about James Gunn is no character is wasted in his films. Like, even Amanda Waller's, like, intern support tech team has an arc in this movie and pays it off and sets something up for them in the future because now they're handling two of the guy and the girl are going to be handling him, and they are in the Peacemaker series, so
I took that as supposed to be like those guys are checkmate in a way, right? Like, is that basically kind of like?
I mean, I don't know. I don't think they need any official DC kind of thing. They're Waller's people. Like, I don't even know if they get.
I have a very important question though. What happens because they don't show her again? What happens to the poor lady that golf clubbed her?
Is she
like a like an oven somewhere? Like, where is
we didn't see her.
Well, in the end, no. In the end, I don't think Amanda Waller's like psycho enough to kill her own like team of tech geeks. She knows she just like pushed them too far, but she's gonna do stuff to them. Like, you see what she did. I mean, her thing is like mind games, right? So she assigns those two people. Now they got to deal with Peacemaker and still save the world with him. Yeah. Like, and so now that's their punishment. So death. There are things that can be more annoying than death, and Amanda Waller knows these things. So
that's right.
There's also a scene that they played a lot. Okay, so another very impressive thing that Gunn did was a lot of times you get a scene in the trailer. And the most critical and the most emotional part of the scene is in the trailer. So when you see the scene in context, even though you're getting a lot more context and you're getting all this stuff surrounding it, the core moment you kind of already saw. You got the pull there, so it doesn't have as much impact when you see it in the movie. And here, a lot of those beats that were in the trailer were so much better in the movie with all that additional context, because like the scene with Ratcatcher 2 and Bloodsport in the bus, we'd seen that how many times, right? When he's telling her like, I'm gonna get you out of here, and she's going back and forth. You see that whole scene, and shout out to Taika for a great cameo as well, because that was him, right? As
Ratcatcher 1.
With that whole scene and the from visually, from doing it like on the window and then going to like the flashback and like doing that whole sequence there and making you like actually pulling all that emotion out of it. And then him opening up about his daughter, like all that whole back and forth was superb. Like it did its job and it did it really well. And for that to happen, even though you had seen the key part in the trailer, it's really impressive, man. He did that several times.
Well, that's what they do. They market James Gunn for being funny, but you forget how much heart he had. And when you go back and rewatch this now, like it's going to make it is so much more powerful because you know how strongly Bloodsport actually feels about his daughter and how strongly she actually feels about her father. And so they're kind of having like this weird surrogate face off, but in the way that James Gunn characters are, because they are emotionally demented people. And they're just like, yeah, I'm gonna save you. No, I'm gonna save you, because they have deep emotional needs to save, like, you know, surrogate father, surrogate daughter. Like, and it's just, it just works on a lot of levels, and he figures that stuff out and it's really good. Like you said about Harley Quinn, like the emotional story about Harley in this is great. And it's like, and Gunn did a good job of kind of capturing all of the stuff that Harley's been through in these movies without having to get dragged down in continuity. Cause this is very much an older, wiser, and more battle experienced, obviously, Harley Quinn, who's kind of like the older sister in this family right by now. Mm-hmm. She's like looking at the younger ones like, man, like, let me tell you, like, and she just knows stuff because she's been through stuff. And that whole speech about like what, when she kind of, that whole sequence. And I said, what I love about this being a James Gunn film is that whole part in the middle where it deviates into that little sub story about Harley's romance with like kind of evil military guy or the president guy. And I was like, wait, what is that? Like, cause it is like a whole separate movie sequence in there and that whole romance. And when she just kills him out of the blue and is just giving that whole speech about why she has to kill him. First of all, it's awesome. Like, she almost out Joker's Joker in that scene with just how demented her mentality is while she's murdering somebody and says like, I think you look better like this. He's just like horribly contorted on the floor. But her whole thing about how taking all that abuse and being through toxic relationships eventually just kind of cracks you. And it's just like a good recap of everything that happened to her and like Birds of Prey and like all that stuff. And yeah, and really well done. And also her just being an unrepentant psychopath and really being able to capture that, not having to do the, oh, let's make Harley an anti-hero and never too bad. Like, you know,
I think that's one of the things that I can't tell if it's a criticism or not. It's really something that just was more unexpected for me. I did not expect the amount of exposition in this movie, but like the shocking little amount of exposition you get around Harley made it feel more refreshing. Like you didn't need it. And it's not, I can't tell if it's because like, obviously I've been following the movies that she's been in, but even still, it didn't feel like that was like, it was necessary for her.
Right. We were talking about that a little bit before, like how it felt like they did a great job of condensing the stuff that they elaborated on in Birds here. But it was not as effective. It's not better than the other. I'm just saying it was effective. It worked to get you into just Harley being Harley. It's not, you don't have to recap everything and go like, I still have all the bad. She mentions Joker, right? Mm-hmm. In a sense, right? You get all the overtones, but like you don't have to go so far and make it, you know, like this character is just weighed down by all those all the time. There is a sense of like overcoming. Moving forward. And then you just get to have fun. And that's, you know, some of like, so I feel like in the other movies, it's been one extreme or the other. And here I thought they did a good job of finding a middle ground.
For sure.
Yeah.
One comment says, did we think Bloodsport was a carbon copy from Kevin Wolfork of Deadshot? You know, this whole thing with the skill set and the daughter. I thought Idris Elba did a good job making Bloodsport his own unique character. Mm-hmm. I don't know if I really like the Suicide Squad franchise's take on Black Dad so much, but like, you know,
well, I think part of it was that they wanted Deadshot in the movie, but I think they would have recast Deadshot if Will Smith was like, no, I don't want to do it. But Will Smith was like, I want to do it. I just can't do it because of my schedule. That they were like, okay, well, we'll figure something else out. And then like kind of made Idris Elba's character what they would have done with Deadshot in a way. But I'll tell you what, though. Bloodsport to me, and it could just be because it's in the hands of two different people, right? James Gunn versus David Ayer. I liked a lot more, not as more for like what he could do. Like I loved his crazy, like Rob Liefeldian kind of guns that he had, like the weird tech that he would kind of like pull out. Like I thought that was really, really cool to see. Than kind of what we got from Deadshot.
I think he's
not that I didn't like it,
and I love that they didn't dwell on it. They didn't go into. Yes. You didn't need a whole like breakdown scene of how Bloodsport's kind of vest and kind of self-making guns work. It just looked cool. They set the tone, but for that in that scene where they creep up on Alice Braga's camp, and John Cena kind of sets the tone for the whole thing by like. Everybody, like, he's like, nobody likes to show off. And he's like, everybody likes to show off if it's dope as F. Like, you know.
That's like, so good, man.
And then when he's putting together the mega gun.
Yeah, like, that has me just cracking up. Like, that whole scene of them trying to outkill each other is hilarious.
And then when they get to the tent. It's the awful, when they get to the tent. And it's like,
oh, that cut. And Alice Braga, who I love, that cut to her just, like, later on. Like, the jump cut to her just sitting there looking at the camp of dead people. Just like, oh. my God. Like, what well, happened it's to
that,
my friends?
It's that and the sound of flies, like, flying around yeah. that really sells that scene. Like, it's just, it's a super small touch. But when I noticed it, I was like, oh, wow, this is great. I do yes. have to run in a little bit, but I do need to talk about this one thing. I was so worried that we almost lost King Shark. That I was like,
oh, we all went through that.
Oh my god, we were freaking out.
My question was, how bad did everybody freak out when they thought King Shark was gonna?
Oh man, that die. And then, but then like John Cena standing in his underwear when they're all in the it's just so perfect for just like as another layer kind of for that character. But I do love that this movie had so, because of the stakes that are set up immediately in the front of the movie, you don't really see any of the twists coming. I don't think you see the, like, if right from the get-go, I don't think you see the, whoever Pete Davidson's character was, selling out, you know, the team, but then like the double twist of that being an actual Amanda Waller plan, like yeah. that double twist was so cool. The Peacemaker turn, you know, you don't see coming, and then it sets the stakes, right? Like for King Shark, like you're like, anything can happen.
Yeah.
And you so rarely see that in these movies that's what basically keeps you kind of hooked in. I did feel it was a little long in parts, but it makes up for itself with all of these crazy moments. I don't know if you guys noticed it, but one of the things I loved is when they're in the bar and Polka Dot Man is dancing.
Yes, it's all
it goes from like you assume it's basically going to just be like whatever people, and then it's all his mom. Like yeah. it was such a nice touch that like if you could totally miss it if you're just staring at Polka Dot Man dancing. And so it's just like little things like that you got to give Gunn credit for.
Okay, so I can't remember, is it Milton?
That whole thing
and that is a brilliant thing. Because
see him run in the door.
Yeah.
When he runs in, I go, is he running?
He's just the dude carrying the shopping bags and he's just like running with them the whole time.
And I thought it was just a throwaway thing.
Yeah.
And then like he's still with them throughout.
I was so convinced when they were walking through the rain and they're like the silhouettes all showed up. I literally was like, who is that? Who's that one guy on the end? And then the payoff from that, like I was like, oh my God, I called that. I was really excited about that. Yeah. That was cool.
And then the last thing I wanted to say about this, and the thing that I'm really interested in is how Gunn and company used color in this movie. I expected this movie to be a bit more vibrant than it was. It was oddly desaturated with the exception of, I was telling Kofi this morning, I'm finishing the movie in the, this morning, right? And we get to the scene of the Harley Quinn escape scene.
Oh yeah.
And like with the flowers and the butterflies that. And so my 6-year-old walks in and she sees it on the screen and I pause it and I'm like, oh no. And so she goes, what's that? And so like I hit play. It's fine, but because like I hit play, I go, oh, it's just Harley Quinn beating up some bad guys. And she like looks at it, then she looks at me and she goes, wow, those butterflies and flowers and cartoon birds, those are pretty cool. She's so silly, and then just walks out. And I'm
like, that's amazing.
She is silly though. Like that's a good statement for Harley Quinn.
I go, that is legitimately the only moment in this movie that she could have walked in on that. Yep. I didn't immediately regret like having it up on the screen. And man, thank God for that.
I mean, yeah, the one of my favorites was when Shark is in, he finds that like aquarium.
Oh yeah.
All of those things. And like, it's such a high because you're just so happy for him to find friends. Yeah. And he's dancing with them. And I'm like, and I was watching that whole time, just like waiting for the other shoe to drop, right? Because like, yep. I can't be this happy. It can't be this happy. So then when they all pop out and they're all like these creepy teeth, like bearing blood sucking things, I was so crushed. But then I love it because like there's a small thing of like how the squad comes around him, right? And becomes kind of his family. And so it just made my heart like just warm when we're going, the water's brushing them out, and you see Harley trying to pull some of them off of his skin.
Yep.
It goes by like that. Like, you don't, there's a 50% chance you didn't even see it because, like, so much stuff is happening. But it's such a great, like, little thing of, like, they care, right? It's like this little, like, it's just this little things. And there's a lot of those in the movie.
Yeah, you need to pay attention.
Yeah, it's great.
This one. I feel like it's definitely a second watch through, like, at least watch it twice.
Oh, dude, there's so many great little stories in this thing. Harley and the Javelin is his own little.
Oh, my God.
That's so great.
Why do you guys have that?
Oh, God.
I gotta show me.
I gotta jump, though, but this conversation has been awesome. I'm still listening to it. I gotta run. I wanted to share some Suicide Squad thoughts. But man, what a crazy ride this one was. Enjoy the rest of your show. Have a good rest of your show, guys.
Thanks, Jim.
See you, chat.
One thing I'm going to say, and we're going to start to move on soon, but one thing I'm going to say is they actually did a good job of making Starro like a terrifying villain, dude. Even though with this
but the end was so sad. He was like, I was just happy.
That's a great last line, though.
Oh my gosh, that kind of broke my heart a little bit. Floating
through space, staring at the stars, which is basically a good way. He's like, man, F Earth. I hate this place. Like,
but like, he was forced into this situation.
Felt like a Scott Snyder book come to life. That was such a, like, just the colors, the design, everything is so, like, when we talk about, I feel like when we talk about Eternals, and people kind of reference that, like, oh, we want it to look like a Jack Kirby book. We want it to look like this, right? They're going to point to things like this and go, we want that. Like, we want that. Starro is out of a comic. I mean, they literally just grafted it. There was no modernizing. There was no, and they made him terrifying. They made him actually creepy. And I was like, oh my God, but he's still a giant.
What was good too is they made, while Starro was like terrifying in and of itself, like they made what humans did with Starro even more terrifying.
Right. Yeah.
Like the scene in the lab is truly like terrifying.
Oof, man. Awful.
Who are like still like maimed and alive and all this stuff, like just so like Ridley Scott alien. But you forget James Gunn can do that body horror stuff really well.
Yeah, that was upsetting when they take it off.
Like, and that's the difference with DC Comics. People can take Starro's off their face, right? Like, that's not from that.
Yeah,
oh my God.
Not in James Gunn's movie. It's like,
oh my God.
Because then you can do the crazy action scenes at the end and just kill a bunch of people, and it doesn't. No, they're already dead.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, yeah, we took that out.
Yeah, you got to make that little distinction, I guess. Yeah, for the MPAA. But, I was surprised because I was like, Starro could be a cheesy third act kind of big monster comic book goes off the rails reveal. But, no, that was creepy. And, yeah, it was definitely like, I want James Gunn to maybe save this Alien franchise if we can.
Oh, my gosh, yes. Yeah,
get him in on that. He'd be great. Like, he'd be great at making something like a new version of Aliens for that franchise. Like, yeah, I think I just stumbled onto an idea. Let's get James Gunn for an Aliens reboot. Get some more space warriors, send them out against the Xenomorphs and have them bond and fight.
Okay. Also, got to mention it for two reasons. One, Sean Gunn's weasel, because I saw it mentioned in the comments. Sean Gunn's weasel was great. Number one, because he almost dies from drowning. Which is that whole sequence of them discovering that he can't swim.
That was amazing.
Did anybody check if the weasel could swim?
So good. So then on top of that, then Sean Gunn makes another cameo in the movie, harassing Polka Dot Man. And then we see Weasel's not dead. And there's no dialogue. It's just him doing that weird little waddle that he does walking off into the dark. It was so perfect. It was like, oh, my God, he's alive. I wish we had gotten to see what Davidson actually can do. Because, like, it would have almost everybody got at least – well, okay, Javelin did. But, like, you know, at least, like, Fillion got to, like, do the arms thing. You know,
First of all, their conversation in it, because I'm rewatching it already, and their conversation in the plane in the beginning is such gold. It's like, TDK, what does it stand for? What do you mean? It stands for me.
and his power is so lame.
And it's just their argument because they're all so dumb, and they're just like, you know, like, what does it mean? Like, what do the letters mean? Every name has letters. Oh, man, that's great.
It's a very good moment.
Nothing. Savant killed a bird, and it was fitting. that the bird then
his face at the end. Yeah, that was great. I noticed that detail that they had the same kind of bird, his face at the end. Michael Rooker, always giant, dying in some James Gunn movies. You gotta love that. Any final Suicide Squad, the Suicide Squad thoughts? Ratcatcher 2 was a breakout in this for me. That actress, she did really good job,
man.
And was her falling asleep even when King Shark was about to eat her in that scene.
Was so good.
Yeah,
she was very endearing.
Yeah, that was pretty good. I gotta hit it. That was pretty awesome.
And she made that power look awesome, right? I mean, it was just one of those things, right? And by the way, you watch this and do not tell me that Squirrel Girl can't be awesome. I'm just telling you people, I've heard that a lot. Squirrel Girl can be awesome. If Ratcatcher can be great, Squirrel Girl can be great.
Yeah, I mean, I can't argue with that. I mean, you got a point there. All right, so that's our wrap-up of the Suicide Squad. I think we all agree this is probably one of the best DC films we've seen so far. Yeah. If I'm ranking them, yeah, it's probably one of the best DC films I've seen so far. Definitely brings the kind of tone I think a lot of people would like to see, and who knows? We might be getting a whole Gunverse now. We know that Peacemaker is already done and is going to be coming. So, and it's been confirmed this week that Gunn has another DC project that's on the way. We don't know if it's a movie. We don't know if it's a TV show. We don't know if it's connected to the Suicide Squad or something completely different. We just know that James Gunn or DC Warner Brothers wants to be in the James Gunn business as well as Marvel. So that's what we're going to be getting for the near future. It'd be amazing
if he could do a Secret Six movie and then you could have them face each other in like another movie at some point down the line. Oh my God. I would love to see a James Gunn Catman.
I'd love to see him do that. I'd love to see him do like a question with Vic Sajan, Renee Montoya, like a kind of question and question type thing. There's a lot of things I would love James Gunn to do.
This is like dark, even though that's being done already, but like, my God, like,
That'd be great. All right, but that's the Suicide Squad. Matt and I are going to give you some quick impressions of things we've seen that are coming down the pike, and then we're going to get to comics. Matt, you want to go first?
Oh, sure. Yeah,
I was going to go. Janelle, you're in on this too. Yeah, you guys have seen Titans.
Right.
So give us quick, spoiler-free impressions of what's coming in Titans Season 3 and how we should feel about it.
Yeah, so you can check out my full review is live on the site right now, so you can definitely check that out. Again, it is mostly spoiler-free. So, you know, again, we're hinting at things a lot, so you can read that and not get spoiled. I don't know. So there were 5 episodes available to see so far. So, like, some things, like, can't weigh in on, obviously, because like they haven't happened yet, or we don't know what they have. Janelle, did you get to watch?
I watched one and two.
Okay.
I kind of like to watch along with like as things release.
Yeah.
On with everyone, but I also
now, baby, you got to take.
I know.
Heavy is the head that wears the crown.
I mean, it's really cool. I feel really.
You have to leave the norms behind.
Yeah, I'm like, I totally previewed this.
Wow, but really.
I will say I binged season one and season two this weekend. Based on the cover of Titans, I thought it was going to be a little bit more fun and I was not ready at all. I was not ready. I've been in a bit of like a gloom and doom headspace for the past like 5 days. But it is really good, surprisingly, this show. Oh my gosh. It is a little slow. It reminded me like the same pace as like The Walking Dead. There is a lot of dialogue and like, you know, acting moments and backstory references and things like, and I like that style. So that worked for me. I really love the show. And the first episode of season 3 shook me. I have goosebumps. I just started obviously getting into the comics more and understanding, I don't want to spoil anything, and understanding certain characters that are featured and knowing like their backstories a little bit more. And boy, oh boy, did that pay off in this episode. I was, guys, I cannot wait for people to watch this. I was just completely shocked at how quickly a big moment happened. And after reading like Killing Joke and like everything, just is tying together with my comic book reading in such a beautiful way. And it's so exciting for me. It makes the experience of watching the show 20 times better if you've read these comics. Yeah.
Yeah. So, I will.
So hard
yeah,
not to spoil.
It's so funny though. It's so funny. That hey, Matt, I will say Titans this. Is probably. Yeah. I mean, it's funny going from, cause I imagine you watched, did you watch those before or after you watched Suicide Squad?
Before.
Okay.
Yeah.
So yeah, you honestly Suicide Squad was probably a step up in the upbeat department.
It was. Yeah, absolutely. It was
As dark as that movie gets. Yeah, very much Titans has always had its own its own thing. It's always leaned into that. Season three is no different. So if you know you didn't love that about the first two seasons, I don't know if this is gonna be the thing that wins you over. But what I will say is for people who have liked that approach, season three to me so far, because again, didn't get to watch the entire season, but so far is the best season of the three.
This is what I want to ask you guys. Is there a noticeable difference in production and just how the show is executed and plays since it moved from DC Universe to HBO Max?
A little bit.
I would actually be really interested because Janelle, because she just binged them all.
Yeah.
Did you notice a giant difference? Because I did.
Everyone's a little prettier. Seriously. Everyone has a little bit more makeup on. Their costumes are a little more refined. The shots look a little more expensive, but it's not, it's the same tone and the same vibe and it works, but it just is a little bit prettier
shinier.
Yeah, that's a great way to put it.
Right, because I agree. Because I think for me, the biggest noticeable area of that is the fight sequences. Like the fight sequences look a little bit more intricate, a little more well produced. You know, not that the other ones are bad, but there just is a noticeable little bit of an upgrade. But I wouldn't say like I didn't go look at this and go, oh, they've got money now. There's not that like giant, sizable move. And so, which is fine to me because I like the other two, but like that was even one of the things, like some of the fight sequences, I really dug. Like there's some really great ones. And then some other ones look just like a little clunky here and there. Like didn't quite, you know, nail that fluid pace. So, it was kind of a little bit of both. But for me, just overall, like my biggest thing with the first two seasons, a lot of those seasons deal with like, we have to constantly keep recruiting members. And we have to constantly keep introducing people and new concepts and like bring this. There's always like this bring the team together dynamic a lot in the first two seasons. And it's just the nature of like introducing more and more people. Right. And while we do get characters introduced here so far anyway, there's not like this. It doesn't take up a ton of real estate. It doesn't take up a ton of space. Most of that stuff is done like in the character to character stuff like Barbara Gordon. Savannah Welch's Barbara Gordon is I really enjoyed her take on the character, but
yes.
It doesn't like take, like, it's not like they have to devote all this space and time. They do a really good job of like filling you in on the details about what she does, her role, things like that.
Or like how far, how long she's been out of that.
Right. Game. And they do it within this dialogue as opposed to just like, oh, hey, we have to commit a whole episode.
Yes.
So some better pacing this season.
Mm-hmm. You get to see the team be the team. And it's awesome to just see the Titans be the Titans and like interact. And you get that family vibe that you get from the comics all the time. And like, I know the jokes are going to run, right? Because there are a couple of references to family here, I believe. Not as many as a Vin Diesel Furious movie. But like, there are some. But I think they do a really good job of actually making you feel like this group is this ragtag group. So I mean, and if you are a Red Hood fan, we're going to talk about Red Hood later in comics. Okay. This story has been done several times. I think Connor's performance is excellent. He sells it. So you believe all this other stuff. And again, I'm avoiding spoilers and stuff, but you believe all the other stuff that comes with it. It does some really great character work. Mm-hmm. And not in costume, not all the time. Just really great stuff, dialogue between him and other characters. And so I think you're going to really, if you've liked Titans so far, like, and I'm so glad that Janelle liked the first two seasons, because when she told me she was binging them,
they were depressing. They were really depressed. Like, they put me in a very negative headspace, I'm not going to lie, for days. And my fiance noticed it. It's hard to binge Titans. I will say that.
Yeah. Sorry. I didn't mean Connor. I meant Kieran. So my bad. Walters.
Yes.
So that's who I meant. I said Connor because I was looking at Superboy. but
he's great too. I love that character.
Yeah. Gar Logan too. I mean, I feel like also Corey.
Corey's fantastic. Like,
so she has settled into her character. The first two seasons, I didn't love every kind of way they kind of tried to push that character. And this one, she feels confident, comfortable in the character skin. And it just feels like, oh, that's Corey. That's a cool, like, and I like all that. So yeah, I'm very positive on it. I'm interested to see what people say. I did get a little bit of Blackfyre, because of course we know that character is coming into the season and is going to play a bigger role. There's so little there that I couldn't really form an opinion. So I will be interesting to see where that character goes after. In the future episode,
you guys do know we're coming back to talk about this next week, right?
Yeah,
I know there's a lot to talk about. I'm just saying, like, this is one of those things I'm very curious. So,
all right, okay, there you go. We got that whole breakdown. Matt went in on that one. We're going to, he has all angles. Couple questions to answer real quick. Let's just shoot them off. First one, is Red Hood using real bullets or rubber bullets?
Do you want me to? I mean, you could consider that a spoiler. Do you want me to say it or no?
I guess not. Okay. And do we see You'll anything? See. Is there anything about a Joker that appears in this that is going to make people mad, or is it just kind of kept to the shadows?
Do you want me to get into a spoiler?
No. No, we do not. But okay. I'm representing for the comment section. All right. Across the fence. We're going to talk about Titans next week. Don't worry. So we'll get into this. I'm going to hop across the fence. Before I got here, I got the first three screeners for Marvel's What If early.
I'm so jealous.
Number one. I've seen number one. Which is the kind of Peggy Carter episode, which is no surprise there. And I got to say, Marvel's What If is it's pretty interesting so far. Some people were kind of hesitant on episode one, but they really just commit to the concept and use this animated kind of computer kind of format to really do like alternate takes on not just Marvel timelines, but like the MCU movies themselves. So the Peggy Carter is very much the first Avenger over again, just with these details that have been changed and some that haven't. There's some scenes that they play that are exactly like the movie. And then there's things that are vastly different because somebody in the, you know, makes us like a little decision here or a little decision there, which then has a butterfly effect of changing X amount of things. But the same framework of the first Avenger is still there. You know what I'm saying? So you get like an entire first Avenger movie in one episode with Captain Carter as the change, you know? And so that stuff is really interesting because not only does it just kind of stoke your imagination about what, you know, these alternate stories are about, like what if Peggy Carter got a super serum? And not only did you get kind of the voice actors in some key roles, not all of them, but like you have Haley Atwell doing Peggy Carter and doing that whole thing. But you also just get these kind of cool, if you've paid attention and love Marvel Cinematic Universe movies, you get these cool kind of details, Easter eggs, and just references to, oh, that's like a cool thing. I remember this scene so well. And it's cool to see this kind of spin on it and things like that. So far it's pretty cool. And this week, if you haven't been paying attention to comicbook.com Marvel, we've learned some hints that, you know, we keep getting hints that this What If isn't just going to be a set of anthology stories that are standalone. It's anthology stories that are going to gradually converge into something bigger and something that could spark something important for the future of the Marvel Cinematic Multiverse going forward into the films. So with that in mind, it's given me kind of renewed purpose because, you know, these are just pieces that we're seeing. So now we have a Captain Carter piece in place and, you know, I'm interested to see what's coming next. But for me, there's a lot of richness, both as a Marvel Comics fan and as a Marvel Cinematic Universe fan, to what these episodes are doing. So pretty cool stuff so far, in my opinion, for What If. Nice. Yeah.
Nice. Did you like there was a little like divisiveness over the animation style. Did you dig it by the end? Like, did you kind of get a feel for it and like it?
I don't like it when I see it in the Marvel kind of those weird movies they release, like Hulk and Iron Man, Heroes Unite. Yeah. Like, I don't like it when I see it then, that CGI kind of animation, but it actually worked for me here. It actually looked pretty good and looked pretty pretty. And like a lot of the action scenes are really cool and thrilling. And like seeing Captain Carter in action was well done and pretty cool. So I didn't mind it, but I don't get too hung up on animation. Like, I can watch everything from traditional 2D. I don't mind the Star Wars animation. Like, and I don't mind this. It doesn't break it for me. So that is our early thing of What If. We are going to have full reviews of What If and Titans next week. We'll talk spoilers and we'll get into all of that along with our free guy discussion. So that's coming up.
That's right. Oh my God.
Yeah. We got a lot. Yeah. You guys are industry now, man. Like I said, your timetables are all messed up. You've seen so much stuff so early. You can't even keep track. But Matt, take us through comics before we get out of here.
All right. So we're going to, because I know of time, we had so much to cover. I'm going to trim it because we had like three books to talk about. Let's talk about one and just focus on that. And we can talk about the other two maybe next week.
Yeah.
This one feels like Suicide Squad Get Joker number one is the one to talk about.
Yeah, absolutely.
It is a very DC-centric show. So for people that don't know, this is another DC Black Label book. This is from Brian Azzarello and Alex Maleev, two fan-favorite creators. They've done some...
100 Bullets.
I mean, there's a lot of good stuff.
Wonder Woman. Yeah.
This is very much its own... You know, it's Black Label, so it's its own continuity. It's that kind of its own thing. And if you were keeping with the Joker and Red Hood theme, by the way, spoilers incoming, for this issue. In keeping with that, this is essentially Red Hood forming, or not forming, be kind of being forced to form his own Suicide Squad group. And the way that Waller gets him to agree is like the one target that he would maybe put, like, you know, he has his own version of ethics, right? It's always a little fringe, but like he still has his conscience. But like, who's the character that he would put that on the line for? Well, the one who murdered him. Mm-hmm. And that would be Joker. So that's the premise of this. And it's just like takes you on. You get to see kind of a quick forming of the team, and it has that very Suicide Squad-esque. Hey, here's a bunch of random people, and then here's some key people. Harley, of course, is in the mix. But you know, you get a couple of like plastiques in here. Like, you get a bunch of people, random people, and it's seeing those personalities contrast and just all the chaos ensues. I came away from this. I really enjoyed this. I mean, I was in about, probably it took me, it might have been like the first 25% of the way to like really get into it. It's a little bit of a slow burn, but once I was in, the Amanda Waller, Jason Todd stuff is just really good. Like, they're back and forth in the dialogue there. And this, they do some of those twists and turns as well. So, I mean, look, if you watch Suicide Squad, I think this is a natural, like, you're looking for a book to pick up. You could pick up the current Suicide Squad run, which is also excellent, but you could also pick this up and I think you'd be in good company. But what do you think?
I think that Warner Brothers DC should have really just marketed these two things together, like heavy, because this book is like a perfect accompaniment to James Gunn's Suicide Squad movie, but different. And I think the real genius in the concept is somebody realizing, you know who would be a great leader for the Suicide Squad? Red Hood. Like, that would be, because like you said, the Jason Todd of it all is what real, and his dynamic with Waller is better than Deadshot or, you know, anybody else, or Peacemaker, or anybody else to kind of sit here, because Red Hood's always is perfect because he occupies that a true anti-hero space. Mm-hmm. He still has all those Batman values, but he's also willing to kill a few people. Like, and so he's a good guy for that because he'll push and pull against Waller in unexpected ways because his logic is already kind of twisted. So he might be okay with killing somebody, but he won't do this, you know, because or that or the other. So that was good. I agree. It was a little bit of a slow burn to start. Like I literally fell asleep reading it one day. But I was like, I just got to keep it. But once you get into it and you get past the, because some of the panels in the beginning are pretty dense with just like the introducing everybody. There's a lot of small panels. You got to really kind of focus.
Which I enjoyed.
Yeah. Okay. I was going to ask. That's good.
I thought the introductions were really good and kind of like painting the picture of the backstory and who everyone is and why they have any motivation. Yeah.
I'm not saying any of that's bad. I'm just saying like when you're physically like staring at the page, there's not a lot of exciting because he does that kind of noir hard boiled stuff. So that's what this is. There's a lot of people posing with shadows and stuff like that. Yeah. And the actual visuals are just kind of pretty standard. And you know, there's not much happening until they get on this mission. But man, once they go on this mission, I love the world of this book. Like I love this alternate version of things where, you know, Toy Man is just working in this motor yard as like, and he's an agent for Waller, but he has like a crazy monster car guarding the yard. Like it just blurs the line between like hard boiled noir stuff and just comic book absurdity so well and does that so that like, you're like, whoa, like, holy crap. When this car tries to eat Screaming Mimi, I love the things they do with her accent and everything. Wild Dog as like a proud boy stand in is
kind of like, oh my gosh, that whole discussion in the helicopter. Yeah. That's just like, very on the nose too. Like we talked about in comic
book. But well done. Yeah. Because you can see the kind of farce in what they're doing here. But the cat lookout with the drip. Like there's just small details that make this, like Gunn's film, make this feel like a whole world you're already immersed in. And it's really, really interesting. And the twist at the end, man, like comics aren't usually able to make me feel like scared tension because I'm reading something. But this, well, was just like, holy crap, from just a conceptual point. It's just like, and just the ending and seeing Amanda Waller, like what happens to her.
Oh my God.
That's like one thing, the one person you never expect to get got is like Amanda Waller. And boy, like it is pretty sick and brutal what happens at the end of this book. And just the last line of it is just so great.
Yes. That's so, and as our resident number one Joker fan.
Yeah.
What did you think, Janelle?
Yo, I loved it. I also just note, I liked all of our comics this week. So good job picking them out.
That we're not going to get to the other.
That's okay.
No, Doctor Strange heavy, but we will.
But it's so good. It regardless, just great books that if you guys want to hear more, tweet Matt and he'll tell you what we read. this book was great. I feel like you guys summed it up perfectly. But as like a, you know, I guess not a first, I guess actually, oh my God. This is my first Suicide Squad comic I've read.
Oh, crap, it is. I thought we started with the most recent series, but we never stuck it in here because I think something else hit.
I didn't realize that just because, you know, of obviously like all the other content and movies and things like that. But yeah, great, great book. Very well done. Really cool, like pretty to look at. I felt like it was easy to understand what was going on. It was easy to know who people were and their, you know, backgrounds and all of that, as we touched on earlier. And just it's a great comic that I feel like everybody should definitely read. And the end definitely got me. Yes, I was freaking out. And Joker was cool. Joker was creepy looking.
So we'll spoil it just because in people who haven't read the book so that we don't just talk around this on the audio. Spoilers for Suicide Squad Get Joker 1. Basically, at the end of the book, they're hunting Joker. The Suicide Squad's put together to hunt down Joker and kind of take him out. But instead, Joker turns the tables and kind of gets Amanda Waller's home address and location, goes to her home, and basically Barbara Gordon / Jason Todd's her, you know, bursts in the door and then just beats her to death with a cane. Or seemingly to death. We don't know that she's dead.
Yeah.
But she ain't doing good right now. And so now Joker has the button for all of the Suicide Squad's like head bombs or
their activates one.
Yeah. And he burns and in true Joker fashion, humorously, the first person, because in this continuity, they're not bombs, they're kind of like napalm in their heads. so they get burned alive. So he burns up Firefly first because, you know, it's Joker and he loves that kind of stuff.
Dude, so, he's worked with in the past. That's cold.
But it's Firefly. How else are you going to take him out besides, you know, incinerating him from the inside
out? And that line, we can't say it, but like that line is just so good at the end of like, oh, we're so screwed.
Yeah,
like,
we're so effed. Yeah. Because now so Joker good. Has the Suicide Squad under his thumb, literally, because he's holding the button. And so like, yeah.
And that's awful for, if you think, it's awful, of course, on an obvious thing of like, oh my God, this maniac has bombs, and like the activation of the bombs in our heads. And then also he's the Joker, right? But then like, if you think about it, it's so awful because they sneak one into Todd. Jason doesn't like willingly get one. They actually shock him when they stick
and
one in.
And he didn't even
like,
really know what it was. Yeah.
Right. So then on top of that, the man he was who murdered him, he's been sent to go kill. And now that person has the ability to kill him again. Like that's like a mind screw thing that like, I imagine we're going
to
get into.
Well, that's why the concept's so great just by leaving it there. Cause it leaves you to think of all the things. And it's also great because Joker's not just going to start killing him off one by one. It's going to get more twisted than that. Like he's going to want them to do stuff. He's going to run his own Suicide Squad, and what he has them doing, Lord only knows. So yeah. So that was a good book this week. All right, I think we got to wrap this up and get out of here. We've had a long show today, and they're going to start yelling at us from the comic book office. So let's get out of here. Thank you guys for joining in. This has been our Suicide Squad talk. Go see the movie if you haven't. And if you stuck around for all of this and you haven't seen it, I mean, God bless you. Go watch it again anyway. But we are Comic Book Nation. We are the official podcast of comicbook.com. We put up new episodes every Friday at noon on Twitch, Facebook, and YouTube. And if you missed the show, you can go back and watch on any of those platforms after we're done the live recording. If you want the audio, we are on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, iHeartRadio, and you can tell any smart home device to fire up Comic Book Nation Podcast and it will get it playing for you. If you like the show, follow us at the official at Comic Book Nation Twitter handle. If you want to talk to us individually, I am at Kofi Outlaw.
I am at Matt Aguilar CB.
I am at Janelle Wheeler.
And we want to shout out our fans, Hafsan Josh, Cunning Linguist, who's else here? Max Von Schucker, Brett over on Facebook. We got a bunch of people on the YouTube who become regulars. We want to shout out all you guys and say thank you for tuning in with us every week. Ben Pottemeyer over on YouTube. Got to get the YouTube squad in there. We want to thank you guys.
Yes, death metal is great.
Yes, it is. Wait, the comic series? Stop it. We got to get out of here. Stop it.
I love it.
We're getting out of here. All right, that's it. Comic Book Nation, we're out. Peace.